And so the years of plenty came to an end. The fourth reading of Parshas Miketz, chapter 41, verse 53, Vatichlena Sheva Shnei Hasova, the 7 years of satiation came to an end. Asher Hoya Be'eretz Mitzrayim, these 7 years that were in the land of Mitzrayim. The Targum Onkelos renders the idea of Vatichleno as the concept of completed. Like Vayechulu. We say that on our Friday night Kiddush, Vayechulu Hashemayim Va'aretz, the creation of heaven and earth was completed. And so, Hashem completed heaven and earth and its creation as Friday night arrived. And here, the 7 years were completed. According to the Daz Zakenim Ebali HaTosfos, as well as the Chizkuni, the word of Vatichleno comes from the terminology of kolul, which means included or incorporated. And sometimes it could also come from the terminology of beauty. Beauty is when everything is incorporated together, when there's synergy. Charisma means there's a balance. So here, everybody looked great. In fact, from the terminology, kalulas yoifi, everybody was well-fed, everybody was satiated, everybody looked prosperous. And that's how the 7 years came to an end. And as soon as that 7 years came to an end, and everybody was well-fed and prosperous, as swiftly as that ended, vatchileno sheva shnei hara'ov, the 7 years of famine began. The Targum says, Vatchilena means they began hischilu. The Daz Zakenim and the Chizkuni, who explained the word tichlena as loshen vatchilena as kolil or klil yefi, as the appearance or the beauty of everybody being well rounded, so to speak, and prosperous and satiated. So they interpret the word vatchilena from the terminology of choili, illness, malaise, lack of good health and lack of satiation. Everything began to sag. Everything started to lack. The people were as if sick from hunger. The hunger began to take its toll. And so these 7 years began to take their toll. Kasher Omar Yosef. Just as Yosef was said. Suddenly nothing was supple. Everything was lackluster. Everything began to be lean, emaciated, and drained of its vitality. Just as Yosef has predicted. A hunger settles in upon all of the lands. The Urdu Chaim says, why do we have to emphasize that the 7 years of famine said in or began Kasher Omar Yosef, the way Yosef said? We know what Yosef said. We just studied that a short while ago. In the Sefer Torah, it's a couple of lines back. Why does the Torah have to emphasize this? And the answer, says the Urdu Chaim, is because it was only with these 7 years, with the advent of the starvation and the famine, that the people really said, ah, he knows what he's talking about. So it began 7 good years. I said, all right. He said it was 7 good years. So it is 7 good years. There wasn't any clarity to them. They didn't say Yosef was right. He knew what he was doing. Some of them still wondered, why did he waste so much time and so much food, and why was he collecting that? And they cared because they had abundance and plenty anyway. But they weren't really convinced that this was, in fact, the prediction of Yosef that had come true. It's like, so Yosef said it was going to be good, and it was good. Okay, so it was good. But here, when it was Vatchileno Sheva Shnei Arov, when the hunger suddenly hit them like a ton of bricks, and when the 7 good years had ended so swiftly, all of a sudden, at this point, they knew, aha, Yosef was right. So the 7 good years are exactly as he had predicted, and now the 7 bad years will be exactly as he predicted, and therefore, nobody doubted Yosef anymore. And they were ready to listen to anything he might say, because as far as they were concerned, 7 very lean years were now on the way. Yosef had said that the Pisra in Hacholim, that the interpretation of the 7 emaciated, weather-beaten cows swallowing the fat, supple, well-fed cows, and that the weather-beaten and scrawny ears of corn that would swallow the prosperous looking, the very, very, the fat looking ears of corn. In the dream, they were swallowed, and v'le yoda kivo el kirbeno. You couldn't see that it had swallowed anything. In other words, the skinny cows didn't gain any weight. They remained emaciated. And so now they said, we know what Yosef said is going to be true. We know that the seven bad years that are coming are going to be so bad that nobody will even remember that there were seven good years. V'le yoda kivo el kirbeno. So now, fear and terror gripped Egypt. And when people are fearful and people are terrified, what do?
Listen.
They listen. They also may try to rebel. This chaos, right? When people are driven by fear. So Yosef at this point, all of a sudden, takes over as a very, very powerful monarch. And he begins to rule with an iron fist. The mob mentality will not take hold in Egypt under Yosef's tutelage. Vatirev kol eretz Mitzrayim. The entire land of Egypt all of a sudden begins to experience the starvation. And Vayitzak ha'amel pari. They go and cry out to the Pharaoh. Lalachem. They're begging for bread. Vayirme pari. Pari says l'chol Mitzrayim. What are you coming to me for? I'm not in charge of this. L'chul Yosef. You should go to Yosef. Asher yirme lachem. Whatever he tells you, Yasu, you're going to have to do that. I can't help you now. So what does this mean? What does this mean, Vatirev kol eretz Mitzrayim? There's a bigger question, implicit question here. Was it a state secret that years of famine were going to be coming? No. Did everybody know about it? Yeah. Had Yosef been squirreling food away? Could the people have squirreled food away? They heard. They were told. How come nobody put any food away? So Rashi tells us they did indeed. Well, if they did indeed, why were they hungry now? So this is the obvious question. If they put food away, why were they hungry? Why were they screaming? Why were they begging the Pharaoh? What was the issue? Says Rashi, Hirkivo Tvuasam. All of the grain that they had stored away had rotted. Everything Sha'atzru, Chutz, with the exception of Mishal Yosef. Only Yosef's grain remained intact. So everybody had rotten grain, and rotten grain is not food. And therefore, Yosef now was in the driver's seat. He could demand whatever he wanted, because people needed food. And the Pharaoh says, indeed, you better listen to Yosef. Asher yomer lachem tasu. So what could he have told them already? That he was charging them a lot of money? Okay, pay the money. Like, what was the issue? There seems to be an issue over here. There's something that was going on. Yosef made some kind of demand. It seems the people were not happy or comfortable with this demand. They ended up storming the palace and demanding of the Pharaoh. The Pharaoh says, I can't help you. You need to go to him. Whatever it is that he had said to you, you must follow. Says Rashi, here's what was going on. Lefi, shehaya Yosef oimer lehem, sheyimaylu. Yosef said, food you want, eh? Circumcision first. When everybody will be circumcised, you will receive food. No circumcision, no food. It's very simple. They said that's not simple at all. And therefore, Uchishabo Eitzel Pare, they came to the Pharaoh and said, your viceroy here, he wants to mutilate us. He wants us circumcised. We don't want to get circumcised. Va'imrim, they said, Kachu Emerlanu, Pharaoh, did you hear what he demanded of us? Amalahem. So the Pharaoh said, well, this was no state secret. Lomalei tzivartem bar. Why didn't you store food away? Why do you need Yosef's food? You knew this was coming. So they responded, and the Pharaoh emphasizes, v'haloi hichriz lachem. Yosef didn't make a secret out of this. He publicly announced that there's going to be 7 years of famine that'll follow the 7 years of plenty. You knew this. Why didn't you take the necessary precautions? Your failure to plan is the reason that you have essentially planned to fail. That was your choice. And now you're stuck. How did they say? Lack of planning on your part does not constitute an emergency on mine. Pharaoh says, you come to me with an emergency? You want me to intervene? When I gave him the signaling, I gave him all the power? You should have planned. There was no secrets here. Amruloi, they said to the Pharaoh, no, no, no. Asafnu harbe. We did. We gathered a lot of grain, in fact. We prepared for 7 years. So the Pharaoh said, what's the problem? He says, Virhikivu, it all rotted. Amr lahem, the Pharaoh said, im kain, if so, kol asher yemer lachem, tasu. Then whatever he says, you better do. Hare, it seems, gazer ala tavua. He decreed that all of the tavua, all of the grain should rot. And since he decreed it should happen, and that's what happened, so the Pharaoh was superstitious. He thought Yosef had become kind of magic. But actually Yosef didn't. The decay, the rot, was natural. Yosef did things to prevent the decay. That was his wisdom. He used earth like sand, and in this way inoculated because he took sand from the soil, he inoculated the grain and the produce so that it shouldn't rot. But Yosef did something special. They didn't do anything special. They just put it away as they were told. So the Pharaoh said, well, clearly he's cast some kind of spell upon all of your grain. Really, in Mitzrayim, nobody else had tried to store grain before. Who stored food? You didn't store food. You're hungry. You went and got food. Especially in Egypt. Nile Delta was always there, and the water was always there, and things were always growing. This is the first time Egypt experiences the famine. Previously, in Canaan, they experience a famine. In other parts of the world, they experience a famine. In Egypt, Egypt's the land that has no famine. So Egyptians had no idea of how to store things or put things away. And it was Yosef and his wisdom who made sure that things wouldn't rot, but everything that the Egyptians put away, everything rotted. So the Pharaoh says, clearly he's some kind of magician. He cast a spell on your food, on your grain, your produce, and v'hikivu, it all rotted. Umay mizir olein v'namos. And what if he casts some kind of spell that we should rot? What if he decides we're going to die? He's in the driver's seat. Whatever Yosef is going to say, you're going to have to listen to. And so they had no choice. Nobody was happy about it, but everybody followed the law. They obeyed orders. As we read in the next verse, v'harov hoya al pnei kol erei ha'aretz, the famine was on the face of the entire earth, the entire land. V'yiftach Yosef es kol asher bohem, Yosef now began to open the storehouses. V'yishbar l'mitzrayim, he provided and sustained the Egyptians. V'yechazak ha'ra'av be'eretz Mitzrayim, the famine increased and became more and more intense. And eventually, it wasn't just Egypt. But in fact, verse 57, all of the surrounding region came to Egypt. Lishbar el Yosef, they came to acquire provisions through Yosef. Why? Because the famine had become very, very powerful and very intense, increasingly intense throughout the entire land.
Did they have to circumcise as well? Anybody that wanted food?
The non-Egyptians have to circumcise themselves. We don't read of that. And we don't have any reason to assume so. So who was hit hardest? Rashi says, what's al pnei kol haaretz? What do you mean the famine is on the face of the earth? Rashi says, ha, mihem, who is the face? Pnei haaretz, you know who the face of the earth? Elu ashirim. The wealthy were hit first because they don't know how to deal with hunger. They don't know how to deal with starvation. And all of a sudden they were starving. And so we got problems. Everybody came. Vayishbar mitle Mitzrayim. Shever, says Rashi, the word shever does not mean provision, but really it means mecher. Lashon mecher, it means to buy. Lashon kinyan, they had to buy. Kan mishamish lashon mecher. Here, it refers to, in the terminology of purchasing, that the purchase provisions. And this is what Jacob says in two psukim from now. Shivru lanu ma'at eichel. Go and purchase some food for us. Go get us some food. Procure some food. Lashon kinyan. And Rashi goes through this grammatical kind of twister. He says, Val Tamer, don't say that the word shever is einoi ki im betavua, that the word shever is only when you buy grain. In other words, it's a procurement of produce. Rashi says, you can't say that. Sha'af b'yayin v'cholov, when it comes to wine or milk, matzinu, we also find elsewhere in the book of Isaiah, but we also find the idea of shever in the terminology of buying these provisions. V'lechu, it is written in the book of Isaiah, chapter 55, Shivru b'lei kesef u'b'lei mechir, yayin v'cholov. Go and buy for yourself wine and milk at no price. In other words, at no cost. It's free now, says Yeshayahu. That's what will happen. So we have this idea of shever, of purchasing, And everybody came to purchase. Everybody came to purchase from all over the various lands. Everybody else had to pay. The Egyptians paid less of a premium. However, they paid in a different way. They all had to get circumcised. The Medrash Lekachtev says that when a person is hungry, then they need more food to be satiated. It's like the bread basket, the full bread basket metaphor. So when there was plenty of food, it says they would be able to get away with a litra, which is a measure. And now, in these hunger years, they weren't satiated until they had consumed 3 litraot, 3 measures. Rabbeinu Bechaya says, in the first year, the famine was not felt in Egypt. But it was only the second year that the famine hit Egypt. So the famine hit everywhere else first, which makes sense, because they didn't have a Nile. Then, this is accelerated, now we go into a second year, and in the second year, it's really bad. And that's why immediately afterwards, we hear of Jacob speaking to his sons, go get us some food, because they're starving. Everybody else has been going to Egypt for a year already, and we held ourselves back, high and mighty, proud, we don't want to deal with this. But you got to take care, you got to go and get food. And so Yaakov sends his sons, and that's, of course, how the story unfolds. So what's the big question for this morning? Why bother making everybody get circumcised? What's up with that? Just to torture everybody? You wanted to show them who's boss? Why did you? Clearly it wasn't popular. They went running to the Pharaoh. They said, Pharaoh, look what he wants us to do. And the Pharaoh said to Yosef, hey, you got to listen to what he says. But why did Yosef want to do that to begin with? So the Rebbe asked this question. And there are different answers. There are answers that are found in the Kli Yakar explains it one way, the Ifei Toyar, and so on and so forth. But here is the way the Rebbe explains it. Page Resh Mem Vav, which is Simen Yud, the 10th entry on Parshas Mikitz. Yesh lahakshes, we might well ask, Madua Dorash Yosef Mehametziyim Lomulas Atzmam. Why indeed did Yosef demand of the Egyptians that they circumcise themselves? I mean, after all, it is a mitzvah, Shaloi Nitzdavu B'Me'elam. Nowhere is there a commandment that says we should get all of the world to circumcise themselves. This is a Jewish thing. Many years ago, I did a radio show on the Culture Wars, John Oakley's Culture Wars. It was about circumcision. So the atheist against me, he's actually a Jew. His mother's Jewish. Justin Trottier. And he was saying circumcision is terrible, it's mutilation. I said to him after the show, you are circumcised, aren't you? He turned colors. He's like, this is horrible, it's terrible, we have to do studies, and everything was him with statistics. He used to make up statistics every time in the show. Statistics are here and statistics are here and do studies. I said to him, we've been doing this now for 37 centuries. We didn't do too bad, the Jewish people. We produced more Nobel Prize winners in modern times. We produced more wisdom. We produced the prophets or the poets. So like, how bad has circumcision served us? He said, well, we have to do the studies. What studies? You have another 3,700 years of time to do studies. Anyway, but here is the point that I made was, you really can't argue with this from a secular perspective. Why should you perform surgery on babies? That's his argument. From a secular perspective, if somebody wants to get circumcised, that's their problem. Don't force it on anybody. That was his argument. So my argument back was, I'm not an advocate of circumcision. Because some people say it has health benefits. And then you have other studies that say it doesn't have health benefits. You're not going to win. You say it has. Others say it doesn't. I said to him, look, this is not. I'm not in favor of circumcision. He says, you're not? I said, no. I'm in favor of a Brit Milah. Brit Milah is our covenant with God. Don't get in the way of my covenant with God. If you care about my children, then don't try to outlaw this because my children will be circumcised anyway, and because of you, they'll be in danger. I said, we will keep doing this. You are not the first one. I said, most recently, it was Stalin and Hitler. But before then, they tried to stop that too. That was the story of Hanukkah. They tried to stop circumcision. We will not stop. We will risk our lives. We will do whatever is necessary. Our bond with God is far more precious than anything that you can throw at us. So I said, if you care about us, if you care about our children, as you claim to care about my children, stay out of my way. Just leave us alone. I said, you want to ban circumcision as a scientific or medical practice? Be my guest. I'm not saying that everybody should get circumcised. Why would I want everybody circumcised? Don't circumcise everybody. You know, there was a time they would circumcise all the babies just automatically. It was like considered standard procedure. So I don't need it to be standard procedure. I need a religious exception. So I'm not pro-circumcision. I'm not here to tout the values and the virtue and the advantages of circumcision. And then you could try that. So, but that goes back to the question with Yosef. Why was he pushing circumcision? What did he care? It's not on our mission and mandate to get the whole world circumcised. On the contrary, this is what makes us different. It's a Jewish thing. Why would he push the Jewish faith on others? And in general, we don't proselytize. That's never been our way. So what was Yosef doing here? The Rebbe says, not only it doesn't make sense that he was doing this, in fact, it would seem to be a direct contravention of the will of God. How so? There's a pasuk that's found in Parshas Noach. And the pasuk says, quote, "V'ach es dimchem l'nafshe seichem edrish." I will, says God, investigate or demand that the spilling of blood be recompensed. I will demand payment. Like, in other words, God says, don't try this. Don't spill blood. And the idea, the way on a simple and straightforward level is, where Rashi explains it is, Hakavoni hileser obneinech lishpech es domam shalhem, that people are not allowed to spill their blood wantonly, freely, just spilling blood. In other words, we don't believe that our bodies belong to us. Our bodies belong to God. We're not permitted to harm ourselves. We're expected to be good curators of the body God gave us. Take care of what God gave you and do what Hashem asks of you. But to mutilate oneself and to perform optional surgeries on oneself actually is prohibited by Torah. To cause bleeding for no reason is actually prohibited. Zugesund. Now, the last time I checked, circumcision causes bleeding. So, in fact, if circumcision of a bris milah is not obligated, it would, in fact, be prohibited. Prohibited. So Yosef is forcing the Egyptians to violate the code of the Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Noach. Not only is he not doing a good thing, it seems he's doing a bad thing. He's making them spill their blood for what reason? So the Rebbe gives a very, very creative and elegant answer to this vexing problem. The Yesh Lemer. Kishetziva HaKadosh Baruch Hu al Avram, when God gave the commandment to Abraham, Lomo L'satzmai, that he should, in effect, circumcise himself. V'yaskol b'nei beisei, and all of the members of his household. Ne'emar lo'i, it says to him, and this is a quote, Himel yimel yelid beischa, you must surely circumcise all those born in your house. U'miknas kaspecha, and whichever souls you acquire. This was the manner of civilization in antiquity, that there were people who were sold into periods or even eternity of indentured labor, where they no longer had the ability to quit. So we can all slave away. But when you're slaving away and you can quit, that's one thing, because you're still in the driver's seat. When you're slaving away at something, but you can quit, because there is no escape hatch and there is no option out, that's called slavery. So in the old days, this is how it was. People had, either they were employers or employees, and very often the employees were more like indentured. That's it. You got stuck, you fell into that situation, you were a slave. You would keep working. It doesn't mean beatings, it doesn't mean abuse, it doesn't mean any of that. It just means no freedom. So Avraham Avinu had people like that in his household. And Avraham Avinu was, in essence, commanded, Nitztavu lomu l'savadav. Avraham Avinu was commanded to circumcise not only his children, which was Yishmael, not only those who elected to join his household, like people who supported Avraham, people who were his partisans, but even people who were simply part of Avram's household, maybe under duress, maybe they weren't so happy about this, maybe they didn't buy into it, but they were avadim, they were indentured laborers in the great house of Abraham. So in that case, Avram Avinu was commanded to circumcise them also. V'tzivoy zeh lechol rak al Avram. This was not only a commandment to Avram Avinu, el gam al zarei acharav, and also his seed, the progeny that would follow, kimefurish sham, like it says openly there in verse 9, it says, ubein zarecha acharecha. So forget the idea that God had not yet given the Torah to the Jewish people, and it's true that at this point, the mitzvah of circumcision was the only one they received a direct command for, but the command had been given even then to Avraham Avinu and Avraham's progeny. Yosef is Avraham's great-grandson, a direct descendant. So if this was something that Abraham was responsible for, then Yosef or Joseph would also be responsible for that. So Yosef reasoned. Remember, he didn't have anybody to discuss this with. His father's far away. He couldn't send him an email or a WhatsApp message. Send me a voice note. Hey, Dad, I got this problem over here. Help me interpret this Jewish law because I'm not sure what to do. He's on his own. Yosef is a shalat al ha'aretz. He was declared to be ruler over the whole land. And the Pharaoh said, and we read it yesterday, without Yosef's explicit command, La yorim ish es yadev es nagle, nobody will raise a hand or foot b'chol eretz Mitzrayim. In other words, did the people have freedom? Were they free insofar as Yosef's domination was concerned? The answer is no. Yosef's domination was absolute. He dominated the nation. They had to do everything that he said. In fact, Yosef was far more in control of those people than Avram was of his avadim in his time. And yet, Avram Avinu was commanded that he had to circumcise everybody in his household. They were given over under the tutelage of Yosef. They were bereshusoi. They were absolutely, totally, 100% in his jurisdiction. In that case, if Avram Avinu's servants had to be circumcised because they were miknas kaspei, then Yosef's nation, if you will, also had to be circumcised. They were also, so to speak, acquired by Yosef. Therefore, Yosef reasoned, I have a halachic obligation. I have to do this. Now, up until this point, he couldn't do it because he wouldn't listen to him. But now, at this point, it's biyodei lasos, he can do it. This will explain something beautiful, something so elegant about the words that Rashi chose. And this is the extraordinary thing. When you have the new perspective in place, when you see how the Rebbe learned and understood Rashi, and then you go back to Rashi's words, you see it implicit in the words itself. It says, Rashi doesn't say, Lafi she Yosef omar lohem, Yosef said to them. It says, Lafi she hoya Yosef oimer lohem, Yosef had been saying. He was saying, she yimaylu. Shemimenu mashma, the intimation of the words Yosef had been saying is, drisha zu hoysa kayemes mikvar. This was a demand that had been made already previously. This was like the government advocating for your flu shot. And the jury is still out. Is it good? Is it bad? Is it six in one hand, half in that, a dozen in the other? Does it actually prevent the flu or maybe cause the flu? I don't know. The government claims it's a good thing. All the people on Facebook say it's not. I have no idea what the truth is. I don't know. But here's the thing. They can't force you. This is not yet a communist society. Hopefully never become one. And therefore, here in this country, people's freedoms are not encroached upon just yet. And because freedoms are not encroached upon, so the government cannot say, you must get this shot. They can't force you to do it. But they try. They have a major marketing campaign. They're scaring the dickens out of you, trying to get you to do it. This is how Yosef was. Big billboards went up. Ads on Facebook. Yosef was, the radio kept banging away. This is government's brought to you. Message brought to you by the government of Egypt. And Yosef would be on there, get yourself circumcised. And the people would say, turn that radio off. I don't want to hear about that. And Yosef was bombarding them with his messaging. Constant messaging, okay? On every level. From social media to billboards or the equivalent of the day. I didn't have a hieroglyphic that into the street corners. He kept saying, circumcise, circumcise, circumcise. The people kept saying, no. No, we're not doing this. Yosef darish mem zayis eid kaidim l'chan. He was demanding it. Yosef could only do as much as he could do, so he did whatever he could. Lefnei sheigiyu shnei sarav. All this was before the years of the famine hit. As long as everybody was prosperous, everybody did as they pleased. However, mi'acha shahoyo miknas kaspe. Pardon me. That's all because Yosef was essentially in control. It was like his servants. Hayachayavim b'mila. Here, this is one area they didn't listen to him. They said, Yosef, we'll do whatever you want. We're not going to misbehave. We're not going to do our own thing. We'll do whatever you tell us, but we're not getting circumcised. Forget about it. When the famine began, v'amitzriim hochruchu lifnes liyosef, now they needed to turn to him, and they said, she'imka l'tvua, please, we're begging you, sell us some food. Oh, Yosef said, I'll be happy to do that. But first, you have to do what I ask of you. Tala Yosef has asked Mose bekach she'im moilu. Yosef said, I'll do my part. You do yours. I need a little contribution. Everybody has got to get circumcised. When you get circumcised, then I'll follow through. In other words, why did Yosef do this? Because he believed he was halachically obligated to do it. He believed it was the right thing for him to do. So why did he wait till now? It didn't work before. From this point onward, when Yosef thought it would work, that's why Yosef began to do it. And perhaps a lesson for all of us is that if you're trying to do the right thing and it doesn't work, keep on trying. Wait till you can. And when you can, you must. Whatever possibility Hashem gives us, throws it our way, insofar as Yiddishkeit is concerned, is something that we have an obligation to fulfill. You do the best you could. But if circumstances change, and now the obligation is something that is actually dischargeable, we can do this. So Yosef said that I move forward at full speed. And then what does the Pharaoh tell the people? Sorry, you should have listened to him. You didn't put food away. At this point, we simply have no choice. So was it a good thing that Yosef did? In the end, it wasn't a good thing. Yosef reasoned it was a good thing, but in the end, it wasn't. He reasoned in this way, the Jews would come and be less different. They would assimilate more easily. They wouldn't be persecuted. They wouldn't be looked down upon. They wouldn't be called Hebrews. It didn't help. Because in the end, assimilation does not take away the scourge of anti-Semitism. In fact, it encourages it. The worst atrocities perpetuated against our people have always been preceded by the greatest assimilation. In point in case, or is the case in point? Nazi Germany. Germany. So assimilated were the German Jews. There was German first, then Jewish, if Jewish. Spain, Inquisition. So Yosef tried hard, but ultimately he failed. And very interestingly, our sages tell us that by Yosef, in taking the Egyptians and circumcising them, he gave them the power to enslave us. The Zohar says he gave them holiness. And with this holiness, they utilized the holiness to subdue and to dominate us. So you think you're doing a good thing, but when you're giving mitzvahs out for free, so to speak, to those who don't need the mitzvahs, not only it won't help you, but in the end, it chas v'shalom could even harm you.